Hello and welcome to episode 8 of ESPN's number one challenge podcast. I'm Billy Gill. I'm joined by Chunky Dog, Carly Kravitz, and E. Liz as always. Guys, this week, I say this every week, but somehow it's been true. I think this may be our biggest episode yet. We will be joined by challenge legend, Johnny Bananas.
Johnny Bananas!
Woo!
I don't even know how this happened, to be honest with you.
It's a meteoric rise. It's really special.
I feel like we're headed towards the like crash and burn phase of this podcast though, right? Like, because it's been going in an upward trajectory that I feel like the peak is probably this episode and then we're just going to go downhill.
That's pessimistic.
My goal, and I don't know if this is anyone else's goal, but we said this privately over text. If we are the Players Tribune of the challenge, that's a great place to be. Just come sit down with us, talk to us for about 45 minutes, spill your guts, and we'll make you look great.
Johnny Bananas, my next chapter.
All right, so let's not waste time because we want to talk to Johnny Bananas. We have a second guest. We have segments aplenty today. So let's just get this out of the way very quickly and toss it to Charlie Kravitz to just quickly review last week's episode.
Okay, we are going to do a turbo recap here. Our challenge journey begins with Dee and Rogan sitting on a couch together. Dee has made the full transformation from Wes's protege to just being a female version of Wes. She is talking to Rogan, her ex-love interest, now number one male alliance, about how she wants to turn on Jenny, her number one female alliance, which leads to Rogan then wanting to turn on Dee. We jump from this moment, which is sort of pivotal in how nominations go, to the Daily Challenge, where we see a very sad Big T crutching down steps and causing a major choke point where the rest of the challengers have to wait for a one-legged Big T to make it all the way to the bottom of the steps, only to be sent home from the challenge and have to crutch all the way back up said steps alone. Anyway, we've moved on to the challenge, which was essentially a swimming challenge mixed with a puzzle challenge. And challengers had to take a 15-foot dive into a sewer system, swim through sewer water, collect 5 puzzle pieces, and then make a puzzle. It was a pretty uneventful challenge. We saw Josh freak out even though it was a girls' day for ostensibly no reason, as it affected his game not at all. He ended his alliance with Swaggy, who was one of his big brother friends. And from this, we move to the bar, which is the most notable part of the episode. I love when the bar happens. And we pick up with that Josh and Swaggy C feud at the bar, where Josh says Swaggy C is sort of a hypocrite. And things go haywire. Josh throws a drink on Swaggy. Swaggy has to be held back by security. Bailey randomly is not being held back by security, as Josh is, who then jumps on a bar as though he is, I don't know, John Wall jumping on a scorer's table saying, "This is my house," flapping his arms, and then gets scored out.
Can we just know Rogan had such a great line there where he was like, "I don't think we're going to be invited back." That made the whole scene for me.
Can I just say that I was making a mental and literal note to myself? They finally go to a new, well-lit, bright bar, and they are never going to be invited back. And then Rogan took the words right out of my mouth.
It was
side
amazing.
Note, I feel like we haven't heard from Rogan for a while, and I forgot he was British until this episode.
Wow.
Slipped my mind for a few weeks.
What? That was a great Rogan episode, actually. He's playing chess while Dee might be playing checkers. Anyway, we move from the bar to nominations, where along with Wes, the notable tribunal members are Corey and Nani, and they are notable in the fact that for some reason they nominate all of their friends. So we have Casey being voted in by the house and Anissa being voted in by the house, both on their own volition. Somehow, Corey and Nani end up with Kayla, Jenny, Jenna, and I can't remember what the fourth one is. It doesn't really matter because it ends up with Jenna and Kayla going into elimination, which is the worst case scenario for Nani because despite having all of the power, she ended up with her 4 alliances competing against each other. Both Jenna and Kayla had relationship issues going into this challenge, which was essentially throwing medicine balls out of the back of a pickup truck. Both Jenna and Kayla lost this challenge.
Wait a second. Can I ask Claire, this is a very stickler point here, but it wasn't a pickup truck. It was more like a trash dumpster. And the only reason I bring that up is because Kayla also had a really great line there, which is, "Ha ha, I'm trash. I get it." I thought that was way to like play into it, Kayla. That was a funny moment.
Notable correction. I apologize. No. I do have the theory out there that I don't think, while they played it off that they're giving their best, I don't think Jenna or Kayla really did. I think it was time for them to go home and repair the damage that had been done to their relationships by this season. And that leaves me in a really sad place, because this might be the last time I get to say it this season. Kayla. Mm. And that's our episode from this week. It was pretty eventful. We got great Josh. We got some good Rogan. We got D. And that's about it.
Is that Charlie Kravitz, as our historian, is that the worst performance that a person has had in the tribunal ever, where they are in control and somehow have lost all of their allies in 1 week when they should be able to protect them?
It's unprecedented. I think it's no one has handled power worse. Like, I mean, Corey was right there with her because he's also allied with all of them. And his one move in the tribunal was just to say, "What can you do for me?" in the most heavy-handed way possible. Like, zero finesse to that dude's game. But the thing about Nani, and this is why I bring this up, I really think there was an off-camera chat where Kayla and Jenna were like, "Yeah, we'll make it look good, but throw us in. We got to go home." Because there's no way Nani, seasoned vet, a decade in the game, could make that mistake.
You kind of saw it in Nani's interview after, where she just seemed pretty resigned on the whole Jenna thing. Yeah. So that would make sense.
Yeah. Well, that was last week's episode. Before we move on to our special guest, we have a new segment that's Laurel-centric that I don't really know what it is, but Charlie Hume is very secretive about it, and he's very excited about this segment.
Well, it's less of a segment. It's more of a one-off slash update. So as you may or may not recall, depending on your level of fanhood for ESPN's number one challenge podcast, we had Laurel on several weeks ago. And here's a little clip from that interview.
They call you the Elimination Queen for a reason.
I don't like that title. Because
you don't? Oh, I'm so sorry.
Wow.
I'm so sorry.
No. Let me tell you why.
First order of business in correcting our campaign. We will not use that phrase.
No.
Yes.
So, yeah, I called Laurel an Elimination Queen nickname that she did not care for, so that was a huge faux pas. But in the time since that interview, I've been messaging back and forth with Laurel about potential other nicknames, which in and of itself has been an amazing, fun little thing. But she sent one back, and I should credit here, it's either Alan Aguirre or Alan Aguirre on Medium. I'm very sorry for whichever one of those I said wrong, Alan, for coining the nickname the true elimination overlord for Laurel. And so she reached out and said, "Hey, this is the nickname I want." And so I said, "Perfect. We told you we were going to campaign to get you back on the show. And now we have a nickname to build that around." So what I was hoping to do is I have three different ideas that I want to pitch the rest of you on so we can get this campaign started. First one is I'm thinking about branding it as, what if we did something like the Overlord's Prayer? I'm thinking we do some t-shirts here. We have a little stained glass window image of Laurel on the back. Maybe we get like some calligraphy font, like says like, "Our Laurel, who art in elimination, hallowed be thy game." That's about as far as I've got on that one. So how do we feel about the Overlord's Prayer? Do we like it? Do we hate it?
I want to know what else you got.
Yeah, I'm ready to hear the other options.
Yeah, I'm going to say Jew. So that's all I think I need to say on that.
Yeah, high five. Me too.
Sounds like it's going to be a no for you, Doug. So the next one I've got, all right, so I was thinking, okay, so where's this campaign going to be? It's going to be on the internet, right? What do people love? They love Shrek memes, right? What about Overlord Farquaad? Yeah? How about that? You put a little Lord Farquaad hat on her with some hair coming out the side. Overlord Farquaad. You get right in the meme lane. You know what I'm saying?
I have two things. Number one, I don't know if Laurel will like this, but number two, true or false, she kind of looks like Jay with his beanie on.
She does look like Jay.
Eliz and Charlie said that. That was not Charlie Hume, a.k.a. Chunky Dog. I just want to be on the record there.
No, I think that this is not an accurate representation. I love Laurel. Yeah, I'm saying this like hat with some hair, this does not look like Laurel. Yeah, we love Laurel. We are a Laurel podcast.
You distorted her face and put a pirate hat on her.
You're saying Laurel is Lord Farquaad looks like Jay. God, okay.
Yes.
But it seems like we're a no on that one.
It seems like we're going from bad to worse.
Yeah. So the last one, how familiar are you all with K-pop Twitter? You familiar at all with K-pop Twitter?
Oh, Lord.
Sounds like I'm getting a little worse. I noticed that from time to time I look on the internet, I look on Twitter, and I see someone is over party, right? And so I'm thinking we could get out on that if we said hashtag Laurel is overlord party.
Ooh, I like this one. I'm already in on this one.
Get some K-pop fans. Get in on it. I don't know. I'm trying to find a way to corner markets that already exist.
I think what you're trying to do is you're trying to get K-pop to like get in on this podcast and just get a ton of like views by misleading them into thinking that this is something that it's not.
That is a pretty clear distillation of my strategy, Billy. Yeah, it's exactly what I want to do.
All right. Well, Johnny's on hold. So do you have any more bad ideas or should we just get to Johnny?
That's all I got for this week. Give me another week and we'll see what other ones I can come up with.
I'm not going to lie. I think the last one's got a little potential. We haven't tapped into the K-pop demographic, and that's a whole thing. That's a big audience base that we should be hitting.
Can I also say that I think that Laurel is on the money with this new name because Elimination Queen really only gives her dominance over half of the field. Overlord, she could be the best man or woman in the competition. So get it, Laurel. Agreed. Good choice.
All right. It appears we've had quite enough of the Laurel campaign suggestions. So let's get to our guest. We've had a pretty solid 2-week run here on ESPN's number one challenge podcast as we've talked to both the true elimination overlord, Laurel Stuckey, and the personal hero of both Charlies in Jordan Wisely. But we have reached new heights this week.
I was going to say, if it wasn't ESPN's number one challenge podcast before, it will be after this episode.
It is 100% ESPN's number one challenge podcast now, and the voice you obviously are hearing is none other than 6-time challenge champ, Johnny Bananas. Johnny, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Before we get started, can we get some confirmation? Should we be calling you Johnny Bananas, Bananas, Johnny?
Jonathan
Elizabeth, Bananas?
Elizabeth, you could call me whatever you want.
Wow. Right? Thank you.
Just call me yours. How
about that? You got it. Done. Right.
No, whatever. I mean, listen, Johnny Bananas, the whole Johnny Bananas, the moniker was basically started my original season of The Real World. But if you look back at the first couple of challenges, I was still John. It's really weird to look back and see John in my jersey. Then it went to Johnny. And then at some point it changed to Bananas. So they're all correct. All right. They're all
love
correct.
It. Yeah. We're very particular about nicknames on our podcast. So we just wanted to get it right.
Yeah, that was Goatee John Bananas back in the day.
Oh, God, man. I've actually seen someone just posted a picture the other day. I had the faux hawk and the goatee going on. And it was not a good look, man.
It was an era. So I guess I'm going to start with a question for you. I feel like for like the last maybe 4 seasons of the challenge, each season has been 2 seasons. First, it was get bananas out of the house as quickly as possible.
Yep.
And then it was the season starting. I think that's changed this year.
I do too. I think there's been a few things that have changed. I think, and I didn't know at the time, but the last 2 seasons I did, World of Worlds 1, World of Worlds 2, were 2 of my earliest dismissals from the show since my original season of The Duel. And obviously, being eliminated early sucks, but I'm like a glass half full type of guy. I always like to find a silver lining. And what I didn't realize until those 2 early exits was every season I came in, like you said, I was public enemy number 1. And everyone, whether they didn't know who I was or never been on a show with me before, just based on, you know, the popular opinion in the house, it was always, let's get rid of bananas. And alliances were able to form and to stay together based solely on the fact that I was in the house, right? It would be like, because as long as I was there, they had this common enemy in the house and they could band together and stay together while I was there. It wasn't until I finally left that season that then they had to turn on each other because I wasn't there anymore. So by me making it really deep into shows, it was creating the Lavender Losers, for example, on 30-30. That alliance, there's no way that alliance stays together if Tony and I leave early. Okay. The only reason they were able to stay together and stay friends was because we were there. So World of Worlds 1, World of Worlds 2, my early exit, caused a lot of rivalries to be created and a lot of people to go to war with each other that would not have necessarily done that had I been there. So it's almost like coming into this season, Total Madness, I was no longer public enemy number 1. Again, and then putting my rivalry with Wes aside, that also took a lot of heat off me as well. Because every season coming in, if me and Wes are there, we're going to go head-to-head. So coming in this season, it's almost like we have – there's like a divided house. There's 2 factions. It's like there's people who work with Wes. There's people who work with me. But by us joining forces, it almost caused everyone to kind of like cease fire in a way. So it just in a strange way, like all of the stars kind of aligned coming into this season for me to not have you know, that same focus and that same energy on me that there normally is. And up to this point, it's like I've been able to kind of play the game I used to be able to play, which is more like lay low, fly under the radar, and, you know, snipe people out when necessary, instead of coming in full auto and just, you know, trying to, you know, be in defense mode from the day I get there.
Can you explain how that West Unholy Alliance came to be? Because we've asked everyone about this every week, and they're both amused by it, but they also kind of say, this something like this, we could have seen this happening. So how did it begin?
And no, they couldn't. Anyone that says they could have seen that happening is full of okay? That's like playing Monday morning quarterback. Like, oh, yeah, man, we knew that this underdog team that had an 0-15 record was somehow going to beat the Patriots. It's like, no. That's not – here's the thing. Wes and I didn't even know that this thing was actually going to happen or if it was going to work. And again, this all goes back to the fallout of the past two seasons, World of Worlds 1 and World of Worlds 2, where World of Worlds 1 was Wes's first season back in a long time. And I, believe it or not, came into that season being like, you know what, Wes, you're a vet. You've been around for a while. You haven't been in the scene. I'm going to let you kind of get your feet wet again. If anyone remembers from that season, I actually won the first challenge and had the opportunity to throw him in, but I didn't, which I should have, thinking that, you know what, if I pay him this favor now, he'll repay it. Should have known better. So, you know, I was dismissed early on that season. So my only goal, World of Worlds 2, I didn't even really care about winning a final. I only cared about getting Wes eliminated from the show. And it's unfortunate that they edited a lot of it out, but Wes being blindsided and being sent in by Laurel and Josh didn't happen without me, because Laurel and Josh didn't talk. They didn't know each other on the show, but I knew both of them. So I was kind of the one that managed to bridge that gap and bring them together and have Wes eliminated. I was soon eliminated after that. So we kind of came to this epiphany we both kind of had simultaneously when we're at home, we were literally in an SUV. We'd both gone back from Thailand on our way to the Video Music Awards, and MTV booked us a shuttle together, and we're on our way there, and it's like, how did this happen, dude? We're here back at home going to this award show, eliminated from this season, while all these other idiots that don't belong in that house are there running the show. And it was almost like a nuclear assured destruction thing, where it's like, if we continue down this path, if we continue this rivalry that we have, we're not benefiting ourselves at all. All that we're doing is benefiting a lot of people on this show that don't deserve to be there. We're literally laying the pathway and the foundation for these rookies and for these nobodies to run a show that him and I had spent years and years and hours and countless therapy visits to to kind of create this this legacy and this show and this name and this franchise. And we're basically letting other people bear the fruits of our labor. And we kind of, you know, came to agreement. It's like, Wes, this is no longer about like a storyline. This isn't something that would be good to happen in theory. This needs to happen in reality, or we're both doing ourselves a huge disservice. So we agreed that we were going to come in this season and work together. Neither one of us believed it would actually work. But it's incredible, man. Reality is stranger than fiction. And this season, we've managed to really put our differences aside. And, and you've seen the results. It's been pretty incredible, dude. Like we've literally been able to, you know, manipulate the entire house multiple times. And it's a pretty cool thing to watch.
That's kind of what I wanted to ask you, is how much of it was out of necessity, because a lot of your allies haven't come back. Like Leroy hasn't come back. Tony hasn't come back. And I guess it's benefited you somewhat that you've been eliminated earlier on, because then you have like the infighting amongst like the Are You the One people that come in, and then they're so focused on hating each other that they don't come after you anymore. So you think it's easier for you this way, where you don't have the target on the back, even though you don't have the allies, or before when you would kind of run the game?
No, absolutely. I think, because if you think about it, even Leroy is my only ally and has been my only ally. You saw what Tony did to me on Vendettas. I mean, while me and him are cool now, I've created a very difficult world for myself to survive in on the challenge. And everyone wants to talk about this curse, and you're cursed, and that's why you haven't won. I don't believe in curses. What I believe in is I am a victim of my own success. And again, going back to like, you know, a sports reference or whatever, it's like everyone hates the Yankees because they win. Everyone hates the Patriots because they win. Everyone was huge Golden State Warrior fans. Dude, it was like the lovable losers. Then they win two straight championships, and it's like everyone hates them. You know what I mean? And so that's what happens is people want to pull for an underdog. And because I have had the most success on the challenge inside and outside of the franchise, it's like I know that showing up every season, people don't want to see me win and they don't want to see me succeed. I wouldn't want to see my – if I wasn't me – I wouldn't want to see myself succeed. I'm pretty sure my parents got sick of seeing me win. It was like, all right, can somebody, you know, knock this kid off his horse here for a second? So I understand. And that's the thing is Leroy's had a very tough job. He's been in a very tough position many times because he comes into this show knowing that he's putting himself at a disadvantage by merely being in my corner and by being my ally. So when it all comes down to it, I don't feel like I've ever really had this band of allies around me because I know that as soon as push comes to shove, it's like if you saw last night's episode with Dee and Jenny, in the beginning, it's convenient. It's like, yeah, I want you to be in my alliance because you're strong. But then the sooner it gets to the final, you're like, I don't want to run against you in a final. So how do I get rid of you? My own friends, people that I consider friends or allies in the game, they go through the exact same thing. That's why Sarah screwed me over. It's like, yeah, I want you here to help me throughout the game to get me to a final, but then I don't want to run against you in a final. So, you know, I think just coming into this season, again, my past two early dismissals, you know, like I said, have created this whole new group of rivals and all these new dynamics that would not have necessarily been the way that they are had I stayed longer. I just think there was a lot of cards that kind of coming into this season fell into place for me. And I think that the alliance with Wes was done twofold. I mean, I'm a cast member on the show, but I have like a producer's mindset and I know what storylines are going to be great for the show. And out of everything that's happened over the seasons, especially the last two seasons, the one big criticism, the one big knock, the one fan request is when are you and Wes going to stop going at each other and work together? That would be the alliance of the century. So from a production standpoint, I just knew that this storyline was going to be incredible. You take the two most like diabolical minds ever been on the show and you combine the two of them and it's going to be hell for everyone else. Yeah. So it was obviously from a storyline perspective, but then yeah, out of necessity.
Hard pivot. Worst cooks in America.
Ooh.
I want to talk about this season because you started out the first episode, bottom two.
Yep.
You were pissing off Wells by taking his bartender role.
That's what I do.
You and Sonia, bottom of the barrel. But yep. Then you come back week two, some iffy potatoes that turn out amazing, and you're top two. So I know there's still a lot of season left to be seen, but are you a good cook now? Do you like cooking? Tell me what's going on there.
So here's the deal. I, unlike the rest of the people I was competing against in the show, come from a very competitive, strategic background, right? You have Dave Coulier, Wells, Robin, Brian, who, in all honesty, I don't think know thing one about competition or how to like be strategic and things. So here's the thing. When we went into Worst Cooks, they were like, we want you to put your best dish forward, okay, that you would make for a dinner party. Not an elimination. No one's getting eliminated. We just want to see, have a baseline of how you do. So I'm going and thinking everyone's going to lay down their ace, right? This is the best I can do. The problem by doing that then is you then have to improve upon that every time after. The chef's going to be like, what's wrong with you? I go in, I'm like, if I throw down my, you know, 210 offsuit and I go in and I totally make a mockery of the kitchen and I light the place on fire and I'm a complete idiot, knowing that I'm immune from being eliminated, then any improvement from there, anything I do, if I know how to crack an egg properly, they're going to be like, damn, Bananas is really stepping up his game.
What a hustle.
So,
yeah, dude, so that was my goal.
Was leaving the poop in the shrimp, that was part of the strategy.
Listen, here's the thing. I got so caught up in the showmanship of it, making drinks and onion volcanoes and lighting stuff on fire. Thank you. Throwing eggs into my hat, that by the time it got to me, like finishing up my recipe, like I was like, oh my God, I still need to add the steak. The shrimp, I didn't take the shells off. I literally threw whole shrimp in there just to get my plate done. But again, I just figured, listen, this show's called Worst Cooks. All right? I don't want to go in there and be like, hey man, like this is, you know, how good I am at cooking. So I kind of went in and and hold on one second. I'm sorry. Sorry, I had a FedEx delivery.
Did you get anything good?
Gotta get that.
Yeah, what'd you
I don't
get?
Know. I haven't opened it yet. It's either a new microphone or it's Ooh. my it's my Here you go, boys and girl. I'm in the next Allen Ginter Topps special edition. Ooh. So they're actually sending my cards to sign and then have them sent back. I know.
Well, don't let us interrupt. Open it.
No, it's all good.
Live unboxing. Live unboxing.
It's all good. It's all good. I don't think that's what it is. I honestly think it's my micro. It's one of the two.
We all have the same microphone. So
we have very cheap microphones.
You got the blue? I got a blue too.
Oh, you got the nice one.
You got the one
we sent to all of our real talent. And then we got the cheap
one. So here's the thing. So I had the I have the boom arm that I usually use. My girlfriend was recording her podcast, and there's like a little clamp, so you screw it on, and she didn't screw it on properly, so the thing fell off and like smashed the arm. So that's why I had to order a new microphone arm, because she broke by the one. But anyways, enough being mean to her. So yeah, so worst cook. So I went in. People are like, oh my God, we see your cooking stories all the time. You're not a terrible cook. And I'm not a great cook either. And it's like, I had before going into Worst Cooks about three or four dishes that I was good at making. I can make like stuffed peppers. I can make like a good like red sauce and spaghetti. And I could make I could do a baked chicken or wings. But that was like it. That was pretty much the extent of what I did. Going on Worst Cooks, I thought it was going to be like this, you know, not serious, kind of like, you know, bunch of jerk offs going in there and, you know, we're going to be making really simple dishes. The complexity of the menu and these dishes that we had to create was unbelievable. And the pressure that we were under, like, I know it looks like we're goofing off on the show, but that was some of the most intense mental pressure that I've ever experienced on TV, including the challenge. Like, obviously it's not as physically demanding. It's not as scary in that regard. I'm not dangling off a building or, you know, having to be strapped to CT's back, but the clock, that time ticking down and you having a sauce here, a steak here, something in the oven, and you're trying to do 95 different things at once, at the same time trying to answer questions from the producer and then having to like get all this out plated and done in time. Like, it was next level stress, man. And it was a lot more competitive and a lot crazier than I expected going in.
So you mentioned CT there, and I think it's worth reflecting at this stage. We saw CT go out super early in the season, and CT's not getting any younger. But I think it's pretty fair to say that you and CT are the two most iconic challenge players in the history of the show. Is that something that you two ever talk about or reflect on or talk about what a run we've had? I mean, I know you two have gone head-to-head in so many different challenges or eliminations, but have you had a moment where your relationship has gotten to the point where you can reflect on what an amazing thing you've done?
I think so. CT is a very private person though. So he's not one to, and even the way he plays the game, like CT, and especially now, CT has really become like, almost like a politician with the way he plays the game. He should run for office, because everything he does now is so neutral, man. Never takes a stance, never takes a side, never ruffles any feathers, nothing. He's just kind of there. So yeah, we have reflected. I mean, I wish he would have stayed longer this season, because Wes, myself, and CT actually started referring to ourselves as the Space Cowboys. It never fully took off as a storyline, but yeah, I mean,
that's breaking news,
dude. We are. Yeah. I mean, if you think
tell us about the Space Cowboys. That's what we want to know. Tell us about the Space Cowboys.
Well, so that's what I said. We never had liftoff, bro. We basically were scrubbed at launch. But yeah, we went in this, you know. Wes and I had a conversation going in, and CT is one of the ones, as I was saying earlier, that a lot of vets are reliant every season upon me and Wes going at each other's throats. So CT is one of the guys that could sit back, watch us kill each other, not take a side, be like, I'm, you know, neutral, I'm Switzerland here. And then he'd be the beneficiary of whoever, you know, stayed and whoever left. This season, by Wes and I joining forces, I think it threw a lot of people for a loop, because they didn't know what to do, because everyone coming in, it's like, all right, as long as Wes and Bananas are here, we can sit back. We've got some time off. They're going to kill each other. We can just duck our heads down while the bullets whiz by. But when people saw Wes and I like working together and combining forces, CT was one of the first ones to be like, I really like what I see going on here. And for the first time ever, like, I mean, we should make this thing a trifecta. You know what I mean? Again, kind of to your point, we're not getting any younger. The competition is getting more difficult. The challenges are getting more difficult. And again, you know, CT myself, and I'd like to throw Wes in the equation there as well, as far as just like, I think establishing like, you know, the challenge for what, you know, and really helping build this franchise to what it is. It's like the three of us are there and we're like, man, we have contributed so many years of our lives and so much like sweat, toil, and tears. Like, why not? Why wouldn't this work? So, but again, I mean, CT was gone episode three. So, yeah, we had to kind of, you know, maybe next season, man, maybe the Space Cowboys will make an appearance in a future season.
Fingers depending crossed. I really want to see the Space Cowboys.
Depending on how the rest of this season goes with Wes and I and our alliance. I mean, I don't know if you saw, I don't even saw the previews for next episode, but Wes is getting a little squirrely.
So I think two things that are interesting there are obviously the sort of argument you're having there, or what looks to be an argument with Wes. And then also the fact that it looks like you might be getting antsy. You might be heading in soon for a Red Skull. Are we going to see some of that play out in this next episode?
So here's the deal, man. Like, the way this season has played out so far with the whole Red Skull twist is, for me, it's such, I mean, we're like trained dogs on the challenge, right? And it's like, we've over the years been conditioned to stay out of elimination, stay out of elimination, stay out of elimination, right? Every season, that's like, you don't want to go into elimination. You do everything you can to stay out. Coming in this season, it's almost like, well, we're going to flip that whole strategy on its head, and now the point is to go in. So for me, it was mostly about just trying to figure out the best time to go in. And as I start seeing the clock ticking down, and as I start seeing the number of potential challenges winding down, the competition going in getting better, you know, I know I'm going to have to pull the trigger at some point. And Wes and I, you know, this next episode, the first real rift in our strategy becomes, because we have basically two different ideas of how to go in and when to go in. And basically he is, you know, he then, based on a decision that I want to make and the decision of this elimination, going in and fighting to get a Red Skull becoming to me a more attractive, you know, option. Wes, who's obviously the less attractive option, you know, that a rift develops there. And I think what it is, and you're going to see this, is Wes prides himself on always thinking 10 steps ahead. And there comes a time, though, when if somebody thinks of a move or plays a move before Wes thinks of it, it scrambles his brain. And that's kind of what is going down in this scene and on the next episode. And based on a decision I make, a retaliatory decision by him that is totally unnecessary, potentially upends this this beautiful alliance that we've created.
Wow.
So, yeah, man.
What a tease. You're a pro at this.
It's kind of crazy how John from, you know, Real World Key West has three TV shows. You're on The Challenge. You're on Worst Cooks in America. You're on First Look. I know you've been doing stuff with Athletes at Home during this whole thing. I'm wondering, I mean, you got into a legal battle with Entourage at one point. I'm wondering if you ever envisioned any of that when Real World.
Dude, I started The Real World because I had a crush on a girl in college, and that's the show she watched. And I'm like, oh, man, maybe if I start watching Real World Philadelphia, I could have some things to talk to Amy about when I see her. And then I just got hooked on the show. And then my college roommates, my senior year of college, and they're like, dude, what are you going to do with your life after you graduate? And I'm like, I don't know. And I sent in an audition tape to The Real World, and I got cast, which was an incredible, monumental event. But what was funny was going on The Real World, one of my main, you know, motivations for going on The Real World was then to transition to The Challenge. Because this is back in the day when it was like Mark Long, The Miz, Abram, Derek, Kenny, you know, Landon, Alton, CT. I mean, like, Challenge, like, legends, bro. Like, and I remember watching these guys on TV and just like literally like idolizing these guys, just being like, I want to do that. I want to be these guys. So that was and I remember at my rap party in Key West, I remember talking to one of the producers, Mark Saliga, and I was like, Mark, I was like, listen, real talk, what are the odds of me being cast on a challenge in the future? And he goes, you probably have a good shot. And then, yeah, fast forward 15 years later, you know, I haven't taken a season off by choice. Out of 23 seasons that have been on since I've been part of the franchise, I've done 20 of the 23. The only three that I hadn't that I didn't do was Fresh Meat 2, Duel 2, and Battle of the Seasons, and that's just because I didn't fit the creative of the show. And I just think that, you know, over time, I mean, I'm one of the few people that's been able to take the challenge and that platform and be able to like parlay it into other avenues, dude. I mean, like you said, I mean, yeah, I had that crazy lawsuit against Entourage. I had a cameo in the most recent Jay and Silent Bob movie, the reboot. I was on they did an episode of American Dad. I played myself in that. I've been on Jimmy Fallon. Like, so it's just crazy that the fans, the people, that watch the challenge and who it reaches, and there's fans out there that sometimes I don't even know about, and I'm like, holy dude, Amy Schumer was doing an interview the other day with Andy Cohen, and she mentioned how she's a huge challenge fan. Mark Wahlberg, huge challenge fan. So it's just crazy, dude. like the reach that we have and who we see, and it's just really awesome that I've been able to again take the challenge and that platform and use it to, you know, get on Worst Cooks on a different network and basically get my own travel show on First Look, which is incredible as well.
I'm glad you mentioned Alton Landon, mm-hmm. two of the greatest athletes of all time.
All time.
Amazing, amazing athletes. Yeah. But I think if you look back at those shows, you see a very different physique of challengers of the past, like sort of the clean challenge and now. And
yeah,
without naming names, trying to avoid lawsuits.
Yeah,
what's the PED situation on the challenge,
buddy? I mean, don't ask, don't tell. I mean,
wow.
I don't know, man. I mean, listen, people obviously because they have they're very strict. Production is very strict about once we ship out about what we bring on the show. Anything that's prescribed, they take, and then they give it to you based on. It's like Betty Ford, dude. They give it to you based on like what it says on the label. Oh, let's just take one in the morning. Here you go. But as far as people bringing any sort of whatever performance enhancing substances on the show, that's not the case. I mean, for a while, they're even taking our like over the counter supplements away.
Really?
But as far as before the show, I mean, dude, let your eyes be the judge there. I mean, you see some cast members come on and they're 15 pounds lighter 2 weeks into the show, that's saying something. It's not from a lack of, chicken breasts, you know? So, yeah, man. But again, I feel like in a lot of ways, the challenge has gone the same route as professional sports. And as the challenges have gotten more difficult, as the finals have gotten more difficult, as things have gotten more athletic, your strength level, your endurance level, your agility level, like they're really, really, really pushing the envelopes now with challenges. And, you know, it's people coming in and having to be able to adapt and to be able to, you know, function at a higher level. And I think, again, just like in professional sports, man, I mean, you're going to look for, you know, any edge that you can. And I think that's been the case, you know, somewhere along the line. But again, man, you know, it's competitive, man. And again, you know, going back to the sports analogy, what I think is so cool about this season of the challenge is the fact that professional sports for the first time in history are just not around. I mean, they're postponed, they're suspended, they're, you know, and the challenge has got this, you know, this moniker, this name as the fifth major American sport. So here we are as the only, I guess, you know, there's this void in people's desire to watch sports. So here we are kind of filling that void. And for the first time, really kind of showcasing like, you know, why the challenge is referred to as the fifth American major sport.
It's why we're here. It's why we're sitting in front of you talking to you. This is, you know, this is what we have for sports right now.
For the record, I put it fourth. I put it above hockey, wow, just on an entertainment value, but that's just me. I know that, that's a, you know, a unique ranking.
All those people missing sports get to tune in and see Josh standing on a bar.
There you go. Screaming, stomping around, dude.
We saw you try to kind of talk him down there. Looked like he didn't really want to listen to you. I mean,
listen to me being the voice of reason, dude. You know?
You're a mature guy now.
Another contestant who's had quite a season as well is actually, he's the genesis of one of our first ever segments on the show.
What's the deal with Nelson?
The deal.
I like Nelson, but sometimes he's a dummy.
What the f*** is up with Nelson?
Nelson.
What's the deal with Nelson?
So, Johnny, that's our What's the Deal with Nelson segment. So I'm just going to put this to you now. What is the deal with Nelson?
Nelson is the gift we do not deserve, or in some cases don't want. I got to say, Nelson's in rare form this season, okay? And in all honesty, whether you like this guy, whether you hate the guy, you have to appreciate the entertainment value that he brings, only because it's almost like there's a delay between what the way his brain works and like the rest of it. It's like the guy just continues to just make horrible decisions. He's like, yes, kind of in a way like the male version of Ashley, where Ashley just will continue to just get drunk and make a complete fool of herself and just make terrible decisions and continue to do it. Nelson's the same way. Guy never learns his lesson. The stuff that he has no like, there's no like filter. It's like whatever pops into his brain just comes right out of his mouth. He has no way of like thinking and being like, that might not be the greatest thing to like say or accuse someone of or whatever. So what's up with Nelson? I don't know, but I love it. I wish, I guess looking back, we've had these Nelson moments in the past, but there's just something he's brought a very unique version of himself this season. And I'm here for it. I'm team Nelly T this season, man.
He's a delight.
He really is, man. He's a walking meme factory. All right. Just the stuff that comes out of this guy's mouth. It's like every episode he says or does something that's just like, it's incredible. You couldn't script this though.
Do you think Josh can get there? Can he raise his game to become like a character like Nelson?
Here's the thing about Josh, man. And Josh is kind of Josh is a very underrated competitor. He's emotional. All right. There's no doubt about it that Josh wears his heart and his emotions on his sleeve, but the guy has so much heart in the game. He just doesn't quit. And I've seen him in challenges do things. The box running challenge, we had to pick up those crates. I mean, the guy just doesn't give up. I think sometimes he does let his emotions get the best of him, and he sees sometimes the good in people when he shouldn't. He sees too much good in people, and he allows people to get too close to him and burn him. But I will say, out of everyone that I've done the challenge with recently, loyalty is a very, very, very hard, difficult thing to come by. And Josh is loyal to a fault. And I know he gets a lot of crap for being a little bit whiny, being emotional. But I mean, what I love about him is that's who he really is. Josh is not trying to be someone that he's not. Josh is not trying to put up any sort of a front. Josh is not trying to create some character. He is 100% the emotional, massive baby Huey of a human being that he is, dude. And that's just him, dude. And it's like, love him or hate him, it's like you can love or hate who he is, but there's one thing Josh will never be accused of, and that's being fake. I mean, he's authentic, man. And you know, you at least got to hand him that.
Johnny, we talked about it a little while ago. Before we let you go, you host a travel show, but obviously you can't be traveling right now. So you've been doing a cool thing with Athletes at Home. What have you been doing?
So, obviously everyone has been affected by this pandemic equally. And I think that's one of the epiphanies that I've kind of had going through this whole pandemic, is a lot of times when we're affected as a society or culturally by certain things, a lot of times you feel like there's the elites in a way, or, you know, celebrities, athletes, that sort of thing, that kind of live in a different world, and they're kind of not affected in the same way that, you know, the rest of society is. And I think what's crazy about what's happened with COVID-19, the social quarantine thing and the spread and all this, it's affected everyone, and athletes included. And so we've been doing this segment with athletes. We've done NFL. Now we're starting to go into Major League Baseball. Basically just getting an idea of, it's called Athletes at Home, and it's just like kind of documenting what the daily life for these athletes has been like. How's it been not, you know, having your season postponed, potentially canceled? What's the potential outlook of playing a season with no fans? When is the next season going to start? How is the game going to look different from here on out? How are you staying in shape while you're outside of the game? And what are you doing to just kind of keep your mind occupied? So I'm still with Kareem Jackson of the Broncos. I'm interviewing Hunter Pence today of the Giants. So yeah, it's just a really cool segment just to just get an idea of what athletes are up to right now, how they're handling this pandemic, and what the future is like for each one of their respective sports. And it's really cool because NBC Sports has also picked it up. They're promoting it. And it's just a really cool way to, you know, just kind of see athletes from like just a different perspective, man, and really just get an opportunity to just see, you know, who they really are as people. And that, again, that while we watch them on TV and we idolize them a lot of times is like being, you know, subhuman and like, you know, above, you know, like almost like God. I mean, you certain athletes, you look at them like deities in a way, and to see that, you know, that we're all kind of affected equally by this, and just to kind of see what they're doing and that they're normal people. It's been a really cool opportunity for me to get to know these guys and get to see what they're up to. And yeah, and it's given me an opportunity also to, with First Look, to kind of shift gears a little bit. And First Look is, you know, a travel show, an experiential show. It's given us an opportunity to kind of shift gears a little bit and go in a different direction. And it's been a good experience for me as well. So check it out.
You said it at the beginning of this podcast. If we weren't ESPN's number one challenge podcast already, we certainly are now with 6-time champ, icon, legend, Johnny Bananas. Check out Worst Cooks in America. Check out First Look. Check out Athletes at Home. And obviously, check out the challenge. Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern. Let's see how Wes and Bananas fare this season.
Ooh, listen, this is all I'm going to say. Last tease, all right? The only thing that's crazier than the way this alliance came together is the way it potentially ends, man. It's going to be good.
Wow.
Awesome.
It's going to be good.
Did not miss it.
Yeah.
Thank you,
thanks so much, Johnny.
Thank
really appreciate
you.
It.
All right. Thanks, guys.
If you thought Johnny Bananas was the biggest guest in the history of ESPN's number one challenge podcast, then we have yet another surprise for you. And it all begins with our interview just one episode ago with Jordan Wisely.
I want us to be keeping stats. Like we need all the dumbest,
wow,
you know, ESPN stat. Like, oh, hey, this is his third elimination win on a Thursday night going against a guy with blonde hair. Like ESPN always has those stats for MLB players.
We should create an unpaid internship position that's our statistician and name it after you, the Jordan Wisely Stats Internship.
I love it.
So I've since learned a couple of things. While I wasn't entirely serious about receiving applications, we did, in fact, receive an application. I have also learned that I do not have the authority to issue internships on behalf of ESPN. So this is not an unpaid internship position, but we are joined now by Ryan Brotman. He's a data analytics grad student at McGill in Montreal, and he is your new Jordan Wisely unofficial ESPN's number one challenge podcast statistician. So, Ryan, just tell us a little bit about how you ended up here.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. So I'm from Montreal. I'm doing my master's in business data analytics at McGill University. I listen to this podcast all the time. I watch The Challenge religiously for a few years now. So doing stats, it all made sense to DM you on Twitter and see if you guys were actually serious about having this.
Amazing. And I mean, we kind of rounded up on the front end of this. We did a bit of an informal interview of sorts that I was very bad in. But you showed me a spreadsheet in that interview. And I feel like if we could just tease a little bit of that spreadsheet for at least the viewing audience, so we can get a taste of what we can expect for our challenge stats of the week through our new unofficial statistician.
Absolutely. So here we have a data set for all the contestants from season 35. Season that we're on right now, what show they came from originally, where they're from, if they're a rookie or not, all the amount of seasons, the amount of wins they have on the challenge, and then elimination stats also, how much money they've won on the challenge, their social media followings, and then we have...
Why is that relevant?
Oh, that's relevant. That's the real
very relevant. It's part of the game, Billy.
You know, there might be some correlations in there. I don't know. I haven't analyzed that data yet.
Who has 1.13 wins per season?
Jenna.
Wow.
Beast.
That's who's Beast. Better than that.
Best win per season, 4.33, Josh.
Josh.
Wow. Josh Martinez.
Kenny Gadosh.
A small sample size, though.
Very small sample size.
I like how you're walking us through that, Ryan, because we're seeing the stats, and then to have you scroll back over, it's like the big reveal, and we're not feeling like these stats are matching our thoughts and feelings on some of these players.
Oh, you know, just based on what Elizabeth said, told us right there, I think that's ripe for some blind resumes.
Okay, wow. Let's do it.
So without further ado, we got a little taste of what to expect in future weeks from our new up-and-running challenge stats department. But if you could just begin with our inaugural challenge stat of the week. Take it away, Ryan.
So I wanted to look to see if there was a prime for these challenge athletes. To do that, I took the four challenge contestants that have been around longest, Anissa, Bananas, Wes, and CT, and looked at their elimination performance before and after the age of 31. So before 31, we can say that they're still in their prime. They're at a 69% elimination winning percentage. And then after they're 31 and older, that drops all the way down to 30%. Wow. This was even lower before Anissa won the elimination.
Wow, look at Bananas there. 2 in 10 in eliminations after age 31.
Yeah, that's tough. And we literally just talked to him about that. As a 31-year-old, I'm not liking reading this chart. It's not great. Not great reading.
I got a year left. Let's go.
You have one challenge prime year left. Well, this is fantastic, Ryan. I think this is a great start. It's very topical coming off of Banana's interview, talking about how CT might be a little over the hill. So I guess we have this to look forward to every week now.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks Ryan.
Enjoy. Talk to you, Ryan.
Next week, bud.
That went well.
Yeah. That's great. The chunky dog's hungry. Oh, Chunky Dog wants a recipe.
Oh, my God.
Chunky Dog wants an Eli's recipe. What do we got, Eli's?
Okay. I had a lot of ideas this week, but I had to go back in something I haven't made in a long time because I needed to include one key ingredient, a banana.
Bananas!
I brought props. Thank you, Johnny Bananas. So, Charlie Hume, you have spent a good amount of time in the South. You are currently in the mountains of North Carolina. Charlie Kravitz, is Nashville considered the South? Did you go to school in the South?
Yeah, Nashville's the South.
Okay, so have you guys ever had banana pudding?
Of course, love it.
My favorite banana pudding is from Magnolia Bakery in New York, which is not Southern, but I still think this is a Southern delicacy, so... Ingredients, short list, 1 can of sweetened condensed milk, about 1.5 cups of water. I said a box of vanilla pudding powder, but come to find out it's vanilla pudding mix, 3 cups of heavy whipping cream, but if you're lazy, you can just buy like a tub of Cool Whip or something, and then 3 to 5 bananas and Nella wafers, like the little cookies.
Underrated wafer.
Best cookie of all time, maybe.
Charlie Hume, do you call them Nella wafers?
I do. Well, I didn't even get to say it. Yeah, Nella wafers. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Hello, milk,
Nella wafers. Okay. I wish I could say it differently, but I can't.
So you grab some Nella wafers. All right, so first step, you take the sweetened condensed milk and the water, and you whisk it all together till it's kind of dissolved together. And then you add the packet of vanilla pudding. And Billy, you're going to hate this part.
Wait 27 to 48 hours.
Once it's combined, wait 3 to 4 hours. Put it in the fridge. But it really needs to set up or else it's just going to be a watery mess. So after 3 to 4 hours, you're going to whip your heavy whipping cream to make a whipped cream. But you could really just use Cool Whip if you want to take the lazier route. And then you fold the pudding mixture into the whipped cream or fold the whipped cream into the pudding mixture. I think you're folding the whipped cream into the pudding mixture. And it's just going to become this like light and fluffy pudding. And then you get a big bowl or a trifle dish and you layer the Nella wafers, bananas, pudding. Keep going until you have no ingredients left and make sure that you end with pudding on the top so the bananas don't get very brown. It's just light and fluffy and sweet and the Nella wafers like soak up the pudding and they get cakey. And it's so good. So that was in honor of Johnny Bananas, a banana recipe.
Back-to-back banana weeks. Last week.
I know.
We're on a run for all you banana lovers out there.
And if you hate bananas, just ignore me.
Tune in next week. Find out if we're doing another bananas recipe or not.
What's that knock-knock joke?
Knock-knock.
Who's there, banana?
Banana who?
Knock-knock.
No. Oh, yeah, that is how it goes.
Is this a joke?
I just remembered what the joke was.
I don't
get it. Keep going. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Bananas.
Bananas who?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Banana.
Banana who?
Mac Mac.
I don't get this joke.
You gotta say who's there.
Who's there?
Who's there?
Orange.
Orange who?
Orange you got, I didn't say banana.
Hey! We got there. We made it there.
Billy tried to ruin it on three different
occasions. I was sitting confused and I was like, did I miss something here? Is this going over my head? And sure enough, a joke designed for children over my head.
That's probably like the first joke I learned.
Yeah.
Does it feel like we're ready for final thoughts?
Yeah,
just reached the point where it's time for final thoughts.
Just check the time.
Can that knock
back? Like it's time for some final thoughts.
Be my final thoughts?
No.
Knock, knock.
Work hard. Be kind. Aren't you glad she didn't say banana?
Oh, we could keep changing the last line each week. I like that.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Work hard. Be kind. Aren't you glad I didn't say banana?
All right.
All right.
See you guys next week.
Great episode.
That's a podcast.